A person is on top of a ladder, putting together the last of his sukkah. He's banging in that last nail, and suddenly as he reaches over, the ladder collapses. The next thing he knows, he wakes up, he's in the hospital, broken back. So what's the first thing that you do? Well, I'm from New York. The first thing that you do is you call an attorney. You hire a hotshot attorney, put him on the case, files off a lawsuit, does a little research, turns out that this ladder company this had a few incidents like this in the past. Wonderful, you have a class action lawsuit on your hands. You put it together, 3-inch stack of legal papers. You fire off the lawsuit, and you sit back and wait. A week goes by, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, no response. Finally, at the end of the month, you get a certified letter. You notice, handwritten, very thin. You're puzzled, you open it up, and there's the following note is scrawled on a piece of paper. Dear sir, we are in receipt of your lawsuit. I've noticed from your name that you're Jewish. I, the ladder company owner, is Jewish as well. I've spoken to my rabbi, and he has determined that based on the facts of the case, based on halacha of Chush and Mishpat, you're entitled to $175.63. Attached, enclosed, please find a check for this amount. If you have any issue, be happy to go to Beis Din. Sincerely, Yankel Schwartz. Now, question is, how do you deal with such a letter? In other words, what happens in a situation where, as far as your legal rights are concerned, you may have a phenomenal lawsuit. It may be class action, damages, punitive damages, pain and suffering. You may have a tremendous claim against this ladder company. On the other hand, you and the owner of this company are Jewish. And as Jews, you both follow halacha. Assuming this person's rabbi is correct, which obviously we can't make any judgment calls, but let's assume for a moment that as far as halacha is concerned, if you went to a Beis Din, your claim would be minuscule. What are your rights? Can you file a lawsuit? Can you collect whatever you're legally entitled to? Or are you limited to your rights based on Chush and Mishpat, based on halacha? Now this brings us to an issue of Dina d'Malchus Adina. Now Dina d'Malchus Adina, literally the law of the government is law, is a concept that's thrown about a lot. It's extremely misunderstood. To some people, Dina d'Malchus Adina is a concept that seems to override every other aspect of halacha. And they seem to feel that today, in the United States, we follow your legal secular civil rights, and we ignore halacha. Other people take the other extreme. They seem to feel that Dina d'Malchus Adina is some rule that was written in for the censors just to keep the Inquisition or the government off the Jews' back, but it's not to be taken seriously. In fact, as we're going to see, Dina d'Malchus Adina is a concept which is universally accepted in halacha, but it has parameters. And the purpose of the following two or three shiurim is going to be explore those parameters and to see when it does apply and when it doesn't apply. Now let's begin with a Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah, Noidrim Laharagim Ulumuchsin Shushel Truma. If a murderer or a tax collector, now you can see where this is going if we lump them together in the same breath, but if a murderer or a tax collector comes and they want to know whose Lexus is parked in your driveway, the halacha is Noidrin Shehishel Truma, Shehishel Besamelech, Afbish Einu Shel Truma, Afbish Einu Besamelech. You're allowed to tell him, you're allowed to represent that this car isn't yours, it's your brother-in-law's, it belongs to it's truma, belongs to the kohen. You're allowed to lie to avoid paying the taxes. Now, before anyone gets excited and goes out and amends their 1040s, let's do a bit of a Gemara. The Gemara continues and says, okay, we have a Mishnah that seems to say that you can lie to avoid taxes. The Gemara asks, V'amar Shmuel, but Shmuel says, Dinu de Malchusa Dinu. The law of the government is law. And clearly, if Halacha recognizes civil laws, the most basic law, the most basic right of a government is taxation. No governments can exist without taxation. And therefore, the Gemara asks that this Halacha cannot be true. This Mishnah cannot be taken literally because it runs counter to the rule of Dina de Malchusa Dina. Now, this Gemara itself is a bit unusual. We have throughout the Gemara, we have Mishnayos. Mishnayos are written by the Tanaim. We have Amiraim, rabbis that came later. When there's a conflict between the two, so the Mishnah always wins out. Here it's a bit unusual. The Mishnah seems to say you're allowed to lie to the tax collector, and the Gemara says this can't be true because Shmuel, who is an Amira, says that Dina de Malchusa Dina. Now what's going on? It really should be the other way around. We should ask a question on Shmuel. How could Shmuel say Dina de Malchusa Dina? How can you say that you have to listen to the law of the land? There's a Mishnah that seems to say I can cheat on taxes. Now this indicates to us that there's something unusual about the concept of Dina de Malchusa Dina. And as the Rosh explains, what's unusual is that this is a concept that nobody disagrees with. While Shmuel, while an Amira may have been the one that codified it, that it actually put it down in words, but this is a concept which is so self-evident that not even a Mishnah contradicts it. And that's why it wasn't a question on Shmuel, it was a question on the Mishnah. How could the Mishnah say or imply that one can cheat on taxes that runs counter to the rule of Dina de Malchusa Dina? So the Gemara answers like this. The Gemara answers, Kan b'moiches de'en le'kitzva, kan b'moiches de'esh le'kitzva. Now to understand this distinction, to understand the Gemara's answer, we need to spend a moment thinking about the history of taxation. When I ask people what their favorite organizations are, so people have all sorts of different answers. The Orthodox Union, the Beit Avad, their local shul, their school. Everyone has a different favorite. No one has ever told me their favorite organization is the IRS. Now, if you think about it for a moment, perhaps it should be. How did they collect taxes before they had a bureaucracy? What did they do before they had the IRS or that sort of bureaucratic organization? So in the olden days, when a king wanted to collect taxes, he had no way of knowing how many subjects he had. He had no way of tracking how wealthy they were. And he had no real systemized or organized way to collect the taxes. So what they would do is they would outsource it. They would auction off the tax franchise. And a person from each city, from each neighborhood, from each region would go to the king, tell the king, I'm willing to pay X amount of dollars, I'll give it to you up front, and I am buying the right to collect taxes from your citizens of that area. Now, as you can imagine, when they had such an auction, who would generally win these auctions? So basically, the people who would be able to pay the most for this franchise were the biggest, strongest, nastiest group of people who were able to extort the maximum amount of money from a terrified population. So there were two systems that were in place. Some kings did not care about what happened. They cared about one thing: how much money came into the treasury. Once you paid for the franchise, you did what you wanted. There were no rules, there were no limits, and the winning bidder would go ahead and he was free to extort whatever he wanted from the terrified population. That's a meches de'en le'kitzvah. That is the tax that the Mishnah says, if you have the misfortune of meeting the tax collector, and he's trying to extort money from you, there's no system. While he is authorized by the king or by the government, there are no fair rules in place whatsoever. That tax is en le'kitzvah. That is not recognized in halacha, and you can do whatever you can to try to avoid paying these taxes. In contrast, a meches de yesh le'kitzva, if the tax is fair, the king sells the right to collect the taxes, but there are limits, X amount of dollars per head, or a percentage of your assets or of your income. That is a meches de yesh le'kitzva, that is a legitimate tax, And there we say, Dina de Malchusa Dina, the law of the government is the law, and one would not have this justification, one would not be able to lie to the tax collector. This is a legitimate tax, Halacha recognized it as a legitimate debt, and the Mishnah would not apply. Now, this leads us to a basic question. What we're saying essentially is that a tax that is unfair, that has no kitzvah, that has no set amount, Dina Malchusa Dina would not apply. A set tax, a fair tax, would be subject to Dina Malchusa Dina. What about today? What happens if a person believes that the government of whatever country he lives under is corrupt? They take bribes, they do other things, and therefore he decides, this is a meches de in le kitzvah, I'm not bound to the laws. So now, there are two points. The first point is that if we want to compare it to the Gemara, the only case we find where we reject Dina de Malchusa Dina is a very extreme case. The tax had no limits. It's self-evident that every government that ever existed has a certain level of corruption. If your run-of-the-mill standard corruption that every government has would be classified as meches dein lekitzvah, you've undermined the entire concept of Dina de Malchusa Dina. And it's clear from the Gemara that that is not true. The only time you can avoid Dina de Malchusa Dina is when the corruption rises to a level where it's not an individual person is corrupt, it's not like there are a group of people who are somewhat corrupt, but the whole system is corrupt. There is no system. The tax collector can do whatever he wants, can charge whatever he wants. There are no limits. There are no restrictions. That is the only case we see from the Gemara that you have an excuse or a justification to avoid Dina Malchusa Dina. There's an amazing case discussed by a number of early Achronim. The following story. During the Inquisitions, there was a city, Anconia, that initially welcomed the Jews. When they came, they gave them a guarantee of royal protection. The Jews wouldn't be persecuted, and they'd be free to practice their religion without any interference. Ultimately, the government reneged on this commitment and persecuted the Jews. And there were a number of unfortunate Jews there who publicly pretended to abandon Yiddishkeit, but in secret continued practicing. One of these people borrowed money from another Jew, from another secret Jew. And then, before he paid back, the lender was caught. And the government persecuted him. They ultimately killed him. But they also made an announcement that anyone who owes this person money has to turn it over to the government. The borrower, who was able to get away with it wasn't a question of pikuach nefesh, his life was not in danger, but he, as a good citizen, turned over the money to the government. Ultimately, the borrower escaped to a different country, and there was a din Torah. The inheritors, the children of the lender, came and said, "You borrowed money from my father, you never paid it back." The borrower said, "Of course I did. I followed the government decree, and I turned it over to the government." The children of the lender said, "Nothing doing. That's not a legitimate payment. You owed it to us, not to the government." And they made a claim. This question got sent to three of the Gedolei Achronim. The Meraj Dam answers back that the borrower is correct. Why? Dino de Malchusa Dino. If the government decreed that the debt has to be paid to the government, that law is binding. Now, this is an amazing thing. The decree, the government that we're dealing with, is a government that double-crossed all of the Jews and was persecuting them and literally killed the lender because of his belief in emuna in Yiddishkeit. Nevertheless, Meraj Dam says, a law is a law, it stands, and is enforceable as a matter of halacha. Now, the other poskim disagree with Meraj Dam. Mari ben Lev throws out the law for technical reasons. He says, although theoretically there may be Dina Malchusa Dina, because the government had guaranteed the Jews protection, they would not have the right to unilaterally renege on that agreement, and therefore we will not consider this a fair law. Mari ben Lev is, the Divrei Rivos is mesupik about the matter, but again, whether we pass, there is or isn't dinu lechusadin is not so much the point. The point is that we see that even if such an extreme law, still, there are poskim that say, dinu lechusadin, we need to respect the law of the land. And certainly, if anyone wants to draw parallels to modern Western governments, you'd be extremely hard-pressed to make any argument that you would have, that you'd be able to be get out of it because of any level of discrimination. Now, there is one fascinating case in the Ma'arik where he says that Dina the Machlusin Dina would not apply because of its a discriminatory rule. Now, I'm not making this up, but what he says is in those days, the king at some point passed a law where a special tax on bankers. There, the Ma'arik says, wait a second. The government has the right to impose taxes. And in another tshuva, Ma'arik seems to say you can even impose taxes on people on Jews, because again, if this is a country that has a specific religion and they want to say that other religions are taxed differently, they may have the right to do that as well. But to go ahead and to tax a specific industry differently, there Ma'arik says that we can't accept, and there would not be any dina machusa dina. Now, before anyone draws any parallels to today, one can make a very compelling argument that if the situation is such where the government just spent a couple hundred billion dollars cleaning up the mess that the bankers perhaps created, and they're trying to set up a tax to either recoup some of those losses or to align the bankers' interests with the rest of the economy to prevent another mess, one can make a very compelling argument that there would be dina lechusa dina. But just as a matter, as just an example, it's interesting to note that at least historically, such a discrimination was not accepted.
This presentation has been brought to you by the Orthodox Union in conjunction with the Beis Chabad Institute of Talmudic Law, the Center for the Study and Practice of Monetary Halacha.